welcome to the podcast. I'm designer Dave Say.
I am photographer Sid Caesar.
And it's a happy Monday, July
28th, 2014.
2014, yes.
Muggy outside.
Muggy, yep.
Ugh. Yes.
My least favorite kind of weather.
No, I know. And it was like pouring in rain shortly, a little while ago.
Oh, yeah, it was. Yeah, yeah, I'm glad I missed most of that.
Yeah, it was. Ugh.
Yesterday, I went out to get cat food because we're out of cat food. And so it was raining, so I put on my jacket and got into the car and I drove to Hannaford. I thought, this would be quick. Sunday at 1 p.m., right?
Yeah.
And I got there and, like, there's no parking. There's no parking there. There's people parked on the side of the grass. There's people parked across the other parking lot where the Chunky's Cinema is. I go in there and it's just, like, swarmed with people because of Hurricane Demoulas.
Yes, Hurricane Demoulas Market Basket.
Yeah,
all the market baskets are just basically closed. I mean, none of the employees seem to be working for any of them because of this whole thing. And Sarah had stopped on Friday at Hannaford at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon to get like buns and milk. And she couldn't even get into the parking lot. It was just filled.
Yeah.
So she went to the convenience store. So we purposely held off doing grocery shopping until last night, Sunday night at 8 o'clock.
Yep.
And we went in, and there were still a lot of cars, and there were still a lot of people in there, and like it looked like a bomb had gone off. Like, the water section completely gone.
Yep.
The
yep.
cereal aisle was, like, completely destroyed. I was like, wow, like, you know, like, I bet you Hannaford's really happy that this whole market basket thing is going on.
Right, I don't know. It's kind of a bad time for this particular branch, because they're in the middle of remodeling.
Right, and the Hannaford
can't
we shop
find
at.
Anything. It's every people are already mad.
They're all rearranging everything. So it's like not only is there all these other people coming in buying up all the stuff, but also nobody knows where any of the stuff is. Mm. It's crazy. Yeah. The whole thing is crazy.
I thought it was interesting because I almost never go during regular hours.
Yeah.
So especially not in the afternoon on a weekend. But, you know, the cats were hungry and there was no food. So I went there, and I never had seen the little food stall things that they have. You know, so, you know, they have the little sampling things.
Oh, the little sample people?
Yeah, I had never seen that. So I was going, huh, how about that? They're missing out on all the mainstream stuff. And so, and then that hot wing bar was really fresh, so I got some stuff.
Oh.
But on the checkout, like, everyone was rushed, and I didn't get them. And I also, they got this thing of hot wings from their hot wing bar.
Yeah.
You know, and they waited, and I paid for it, and they gave me a receipt, and I grabbed my bags.
They didn't pack them in the bag?
They wasn't there. Oh. And it had taken like 45 minutes just to get a bunch of stuff. I said, I'm not going to go back there.
Wow.
I've just been resentful toward Hannaford all day. I said, that's not anyone's fault, but, man. Let's see.
They should pack your stuff. So you just it kind of is their fault because if they scan it and it goes down the conveyor belt and it's sitting there to get bagged and it doesn't get bagged.
It's on the receipt. I might bring it to customer service and see if they'll give me a credit.
Yeah.
But I figure when they give me my receipt, all my bags are ready. And then, you know, that's maybe not a good assumption.
Oh, that's not how they do it though. Because the woman will give us our receipt and the other dude will still be bagging like tons of stuff.
There was one person. There was one person. This was
one
the
bagger?
Express line.
Right.
So she'll scan and bagging
at the same time.
So I don't know. Just a lapse in the procedure.
Yes.
You know. But anyway.
Yeah, that whole market basket thing is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
The news, the press coverage that it's getting is out of control.
Yeah, yeah. There's a good summary on it's kind of foul mouthed. But it's something called the Gloucester Clam.
Is that the whole history of the whole thing? It's like
I had no
three
idea.
Part story. I read the first
three
two
parts.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like it's all this deep seated underbelly. It's awesome. It's like this.
Yeah.
They've been at each other's throats for forever.
Yeah, we'll put a link to that.
It was really
hat
really
tip to Phil Johnson for posting it on his timeline.
Yes, yes. I'm a little dismayed that the whole New Hampshire Institute of Art merger isn't getting any thing.
Well, if you made something that we could eat, maybe we would notice.
Well, I don't know. It's just
the arts are very important.
Yeah, I mean, there's this whole thing with Southern New Hampshire University and the New Hampshire Institute of Art and this potential merger that's going on. And it just there's no information. The board, the one really huge, giant, sketchy thing is that one of the board members is on both boards, and supposedly he's one of the ones that initially instigated this whole merger thing.
Yep.
And it's like, well, isn't that a conflict of interest? Like, how do you...
It depends on their bylaws. Ideally, there's no self-interest involved between members of a board.
Hmm.
that would be an ethical breach.
Right.
But then again, I've only been on a few boards.
So just everything about it seems sketchy, and the fact that they've got like a September 1st deadline, and the fact that they're doing this when in the middle of the summer when there's no students around at all to give any kind of feedback, and there's no current president at the Institute. There's just an interim president, and like he can't get his act together at all. And he just happened to go on vacation for 3 weeks, which is like leading right up to the September deadline.
Yep.
Just everything about the whole thing seems sketchy. And supposedly somebody from the Hippo contacted a bunch of people that are on this little Facebook group that's all alumni and faculty and staff and stuff, so that they can air their grievances. And then somebody just got a hold of these rules that the board created. That basically they made it in 2012, so it's the current existing board, and it's all this stuff about how anything that is done, like the staff, faculty, and alumni and students all have direct input into all these decisions that are made, and it's just they're not doing it. Like there's just nothing. Like the board is like doing everything they can to avoid all of the students, alumni, and faculty, and all the feedback that they've been getting. So it's like, what the hell is going on? So there's supposedly a Hippo article coming out this Thursday. I'm curious to see what it's going to say. But I kind of wish that like somebody needs to get cameras in front of some of these board members' faces and figure out what's going on. And then there's just a lot of like bullying tactics from Southern New Hampshire University that's going on. Like one of the things that we just found out was they delivered a parcel of produce to one of the New Hampshire Institute of Arts buildings, the Fuller Hall building, which is at 156 Concord Street. And the person that took the delivery said, well, we didn't order this stuff. We don't order this kind of things. And they said, well, this is for you. And they said, well, who is it made out to? And it was made out to Southern New Hampshire University at 156 Concord Street. So they're already using the Institute's address, even though, you know, this is still a, like just a quote-unquote potential merger.
So how is this a bullying tactic? It's like
I just
instead
I just,
of the head of a horse, it's like a head of cabbage.
I think they're just trying to intimidate the school into, you know, they've already sent
with
lots of I don't know. This is the vibe that the faculty is giving off. Like they're just like, why? What's going on? Like why would you do that? What's the point of doing that?
So they're relying on the ability of this faculty to jump at shadows. Not predict things, so just make them nervous.
Why would you do that? Like, what's the point of doing that? Why would you purposely order a giant order and send it to an address that's not your address under your name?
I don't know. There could be any number of reasons.
It just seems sketchy.
Well, it is mysterious. It's certainly out of the ordinary.
Right.
It could be that maybe there is some sort of produce sharing thing. Maybe someone sent in something. You know, I don't know. The way I would approach it is like it's one data point. Let's keep note of this.
Yes. So it's caused the students to they created a petition, and the petition is clear. All it's asking for is transparency. Mm-hmm. They want to be included. They want to know like what is going on, what's being discussed, all this kind of stuff. So they got over 1,000 signatures for this petition, and they printed it out, and the board had some sort of top secret offsite meeting last Wednesday. And supposedly they gave the petition to the current interim president of the Institute.
Yep.
And nobody knows if he actually gave it to them during the meeting because he's on vacation for 3 weeks.
Right.
So did he give it to him before he went on vacation? And if he didn't give it to him on vacation, like how irresponsible is that?
Yep.
So it's just everything is up in the air right now, but it just seems really, really everything just about it seems sketchy.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So part of the transparency thing would be to find what the trail of self-interest is
right
among the various board members.
Yes.
Even publishing the names of the board members, assuming this is public, I imagine it is.
Yes.
And it's seeing where the money is going.
Right.
Seeing what kind of companies they, what kind of relationships they have, how far back that goes. Yeah, but I guess is the Institute a private institution or is it a nonprofit?
It is a nonprofit.
It's a nonprofit?
Yes.
Is it? Okay. Isn't Southern New Hampshire University also
a
nonprofit?
They're a nonprofit, but I guess they market themselves like a for-profit. Or something. I don't know enough about them. Yeah. I know they're big on the online thing. Like that's where all their money's been coming from. Is all.
And so the Institute is a nonprofit. So if they are a nonprofit, then I guess there's certain records that they need to make public.
Right.
Which should be, you should be able to get those. You know, is there a leader of this movement?
Of what
the student movement?
There's a group. I mean, up until this merger thing happening, like, you know, the students didn't have anything to do with any of this kind of stuff.
Yep.
But because of this, like a group has been formed, like a Facebook group has been formed, and there's been plenty of people posting questions and opinions, and you know, there's a hub now that people can go to. But I don't, you know, I don't know.
Yep.
I don't know.
Well, I hope that resolves itself.
It's just scary. Like, I get sickened by the thought that I may have to start my college loans are now going to have to start going to Southern New Hampshire University rather than where they were originally intended to go.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know.
But you still got your education from the Institute.
I did.
And so this is really kind of...
But it would make that degree look worse than it probably is.
I see.
Like, I don't know. I'm going to talk about something else because it's getting me frustrated.
Okay. I guess I'm used to dealing with this kind of BS. Yeah. So I just started looking at it somewhat dispassionately. So
yeah.
Sorry that I'm not ranting with you. I'm just not that kind of person. But let's see.
We can let everybody we know that listens to this rant on with us all. What, we got like 8 listeners now?
I think so. We should start with Elise McDonald and Robert Pent. I looked this up. Pentinent.
There's 2 T's together.
Pentinen. That's it. Pentinen.
Pentinen.
Yes.
All right. Robert Pentinen.
Yep. Elise and Robert, who we know from the building.
Studio 99.
They used to be here.
Yep.
Man, Studio 99.
And Elise slow down. Is also the coordinator of the Gate City karaoke thing.
That's right.
That exists currently.
That's right.
Yes. And our good buddy, Kentakoga.
Kentakoga. Who posted a wonderful picture of himself by his sports car wearing some sort of suit. It reminded me of that scene in Ferris Bueller's Day Off when what's his face? Ferris goes and picks up his girlfriend at the high school, and then he's pretending he's her dad, standing outside with a trench coat.
Yep.
Yeah, it had that kind of vibe to it. So I'm like, hi, here I am to do something cool and mysterious.
Kenta. And Travis Roy, our buddy Travis Roy, who is actually friends with Kentakoga. That's how I met Kenta.
Oh, really?
Okay. Through Travis.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Jeff Barkowski, who we know listens because he pointed out a glitch in last week's podcast.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff. And also, I think Alan Yen still listens. Or I remember him saying that he would listen to it, and he actually seemed quite excited by it.
He listens to it when he drives or something. Like, I think I read something about, like, it breaks up his commute.
Oh, he had said, yes.
Something to do with his commute. I was thinking about Alan the other day because I was thinking they unveiled a Firefly mass multiplayer online thing. And
Firefly
I was thinking,
online.
How awesome would it have been if we could have gone to San Diego Comic-Con this year to push the Serenity Firefly USB thing? Like, if he had gotten a booth, like an Incubot booth, and we had gone, we could have manned it, and we could have been at the convention, and, like... We could have pushed that product, and I bet that product would have sold out.
Probably would have.
That's the core. Like, you want to go to your fans, that's where you go. You go to San Diego Comic Con, and you'd be like, look at this awesome Firefly branded USB, fully licensed. It's amazing. It's made out of metal and it lights up, and it's insane. I bet you he would have left with a trillion pre-orders.
Probably. That would be a place to
show. Alan, if you're listening, send us next year. We will be your booth people.
Send Sid.
Send me to the San Diego. I will go to San Diego Comic Con, and I will sit at this booth. And I'll push this product because it's an amazing product. Let's do it.
Yeah, we should get an update for him.
Yes.
From him. And lastly, we've got Quentin Lewis and Eric Sagan, who I think posted on the end of something I was saying on Facebook.
Yes.
Quentin I know from the 1 year I was doing the first Lego League robotics thing for Bishop Gereton High School.
Oh.
Someone asked Deepak, who was who runs Active Edge, the company I used to work for.
Yep.
So, did anyone want to help volunteer to show these kids what we know about something that they might need? And I didn't really know anyone in Nashua at that time, so I said, I'll help. Yeah, so I go, and that's where I met Q, as he is called. He's pretty cool. He would be the king of the mods if he still lived in Nashua.
Really?
Yeah. That's kind of how we think of him. Because every time I gained an interest, I found he had already been into it. Scooters or making things out of, like, you know, like electronic stuff, programming. I don't know. He's cool. Huh. And then Eric Sagan is someone who I know from, when do I know him? From, I met him at South by Southwest in person, but I knew him before as like a blogger. He used to have a pretty popular illustration cartooning blog back in 2007, 2008 under the name Cartooner.
Huh.
And he lives in upstate New York, Rochester, or he lived there. I don't know where he lives now, which is I was there for 5 years, too. So I think of Rochester as kind of like a second hometown in a way, because I spent some good time there.
Yeah.
Going to grad school.
Yeah.
So that's it. That's, what, eight people? Seven?
If there are more, please let us know. Tell us who you are.
If you want.
If you want.
If you want.
We'd love to know.
It's just curious. So we're up to, so if we had one more person, that'd be another 10% growth of our audience. There's got to be a few more, because I know we actually are rated now on iTunes. I noticed this, which means I think you need at least 10 people to rate you.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it doesn't tell you
who
rates you.
Who are these silent listeners?
I don't know.
Who are you?
It could be these people.
Who are
I mean, they had to get this podcast somehow.
Yep.
I assume they're not just clicking on the website
just randomly.
So it's like, I'm going to sit in front of my computer and not move for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Who does that? Not me.
I did that last week because I was sick. I got some sort of flu thing. And I couldn't move. I didn't want to move. I knew I was sick because I spent one day watching an entire season of Comic Book Men.
Comic Book what?
Comic Book Men.
What's that? It's, a documentary?
It's this Kevin Smith show where they it's basically one of those reality shows where they go into his comic book store and they just record stuff.
Oh, was it?
So
awesome.
It was kind of like the employees are kind of annoying. I like it because I like watching people walk in there trying to sell collectible things. So that for me, that was the thing. Like, it was like, you know,
like your Pawn Stars.
Yes, thing. It's the comic book Pawn Stars. So it was like people come in with really old comics, and that stuff was fascinating. The other stuff where they're trying to like make the employees more interesting than they really are. Yeah. You know, like let's make them do this, and let's make them try to make a sandwich, and it's like, no.
So you're entertained.
I just like play all, and I just sat there, and I was just like drooling. I was just like,
so it was good. Did it extend this illness?
The comic book parts were good.
Okay, the rest of it was...
The rest of it was like, just get to the other stuff, please. So that was what I did basically one day. I just couldn't move. And then the second day, I played the Destiny beta, which was out for the Xbox 360.
Oh, how was
all
it?
The other. I'm conflicted. I'm so conflicted. Yes, huh? Destiny is made by this company, Bungie. Bungie is responsible for creating Halo, which is all over the Xbox. Beloved by many people that love really slow first-person shooters.
It's like a nice walk in the park.
It is.
Sometimes something jumps at you and you go, oh my, and you press the button. And after a few minutes, it goes away.
So Destiny is this new franchise that they're doing with Activision. It's supposed to be this 10-year thing.
Yep.
And so they're getting ready for the first game, and they had a public beta where you could download it, and it had a couple of levels, and it had an environment open and stuff like that. And it's, I mean, I played all day, and I reached the level 8 cap that they had, and it's like this very light MMORPG thing. So like everything has hit points, and there's ranking and all these different outfits you can upgrade, and it increases your dexterity and your defense and all that kind of stuff. So that was kind of neat. I got addicted to trying to constantly upgrade.
Yep.
But my God, does it feel like Halo? It's a Halo game, and but it's a little too Halo. You know,
too Halo?
This is part of me is like, okay, this is Bungie's equivalent to Halo 4 because they stopped making Halo games so that they could start making this game, and they handed Halo over. So another company did Halo 4, but it feels just like a Halo game, and it feels
too familiar.
It's too familiar because the environments look the same. They're pretty, but they all look the same.
Yeah.
The enemies are all—they're all new enemies, but they all retain the same. I don't know what you call it. Like
actions, the behaviors,
sort behavior things. Like they all work. You know, like in Halo, you had like this four different types of enemies, but they all have this little hierarchy within themselves. And it's the same thing. You have four different enemies in this game, but they all have these little hierarchies. And so there's like the one captain, and then there's the two guys that sort of try to cover him, and then so it's Halo, but it's just skinned over with new stuff.
Yep.
Which is, and part of me was expecting it to get, to them try to get away from that. But I suppose, like, if they've got an engine that works, then why try to, you know, like, totally start all over again?
Yep. It's a big challenge to make something like that. So
it is. So so I liked it, but it still felt a little too familiar. But at the same time, like, I played all day and I got hooked on it. So what does that say?
I know. Something that's like McDonald's french fries.
Exactly.
Big Mac and fries.
They're
and
good.
Nice chocolate
they look
shake.
Good and they're fun to, you
except
know.
This one's St. Patrick's Day color.
Exactly. Exactly. So it was good. I'm probably going to pick up the game when it comes out next month.
Oh, that quickly, huh? Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like the only thing I'm not the thing that scares me most about this is that it's a 10-year franchise.
Yep.
And I just learned last night that what they're doing, like, it's this year the game comes out, next year like some big expansion thing comes out.
Yep.
The following year Destiny 2 comes out, the year after that Destiny 2's expansion thing comes out.
Yep.
The year after that, Destiny 3 comes out. So it's this constant, every other year, the game sequel comes out. And in between every other year, some sort of expansion, like big expansion thing comes out. So they're going to, like, every year they're going to milk this kind of thing. And then the big rumor is, because it's Activision, and Activision is big on downloadable content, how much of the game is actually done versus how much is already done, but they're just holding it back so that they can try to squeeze more money out of you constantly.
Internet,
for
like armchair developers. That's full of crap.
So who knows?
Yeah, it's like, as if, like, oh, they're withholding from us.
It's purposely. It's self-entitled. Strong-arming gamers.
Yeah, it's...
But it was good. And the environments were, they were large enough that it made it fun just sort of exploring. But there's enough of the RPG stuff that's new to it that it was like, oh, okay, this is, you know, like, I haven't experienced this kind of thing before in a first-person shooter stuff. And there's, like, a hub world you can go to, and you can meet with other characters and see what they look like and that kind of thing. So it's interesting. So, I don't know. Like I said, it was weird. It just seems too similar, but at the same time, I got completely hooked on it. So
I should try it. I never liked Halo because I didn't like the shooting mechanics.
You're not going to like this then. Yeah, if you didn't like Halo, this is exactly...
and ponderous, and mostly it seems to be a walking simulator.
Yep. Same thing.
Look, there's a hill. Excitement. Achievement granted.
Same weapon structures. Yeah. Like, the same weapons, only they just look different.
To the point that they're all smooth.
Yes. Yeah. And the one thing I didn't get into was I did two multiplayer sessions, and then I didn't touch the multiplayer.
Oh, really?
Okay. It's hard to
find a nice multiplayer setup. Do they have a guild structure?
But they probably, I don't even
maybe
know.
Maybe not
the,
in place.
The problem I had was it was the only thing they had unlocked was like a territories thing where you have to stand and guard a flag for a certain amount of time, and then you take over that flag, and you can move on to a different flag, and people are constantly trying. And for some reason, I kept running into this one guy that had this like sniper rifle that didn't even look like he was just aiming. Like, it was just anytime I would show up, he would just boom, one hit, one kill. So yep. I was constantly respawning, and he would constantly just be there.
That's
so I was dying. Yeah. So I don't know if they just haven't figured out how to balance the weapons yet for the multiplayer, but it's pretty crazy.
Huh. Yeah. Yeah.
Y'all.
I spent most of this weekend basically binge consuming media. And it was interesting because this was last week was the second full week of my themed work week experiment.
Yep.
You know, the idea was to, if I have one main project instead of like three main projects going on at the same time, how would that change the nature of the work?
Yep.
And it actually made me feel, overall the positive part of it, was like I did feel less stressed and I did feel more focused on stuff. And I still got all the ancillary stuff done.
Yep.
So I was able to go and like have lunch with some people, did a little bit of writing, but it was more of a break from the main task. But I didn't play any games or, you know, really surf that much over the week.
Okay.
So this weekend I just like dropped all the limiters and I jumped into WildStar and I played that for like, I guess, 12 hours straight on Saturday.
Yep.
And then I was still like buzzed. So like I watched the last five episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on Hulu.
Okay.
It's on free Hulu, so I don't have to pay for it.
Oh.
And it was like really satisfying the way that ended. But I didn't really get anything done. I think I maybe cooked two hamburgers. That was the most productive I was. But it's just interesting because my brain feels actually refreshed after all of this. It's just like, and then, look, all right, it's time to work.
We're done.
Yeah. It's related to, I had this other insight last week that, you know, I had two insights actually, but the one that it's most developed is that after doing these just these two themed work weeks, I'm seeing this recurring pattern, which is like it's just starting part that's hard for me.
Yeah.
And I had happened to read this article by I think her name was Maria Konnikova. She had posted this. I don't even remember where I found it, but I posted. But it was basically the idea that there might be a genetic basis, a link between impulsivity and procrastination. Huh. Which I found very interesting, because I have kind of an impulsive nature. It doesn't show physically, but really it's more about thinking. Like, I think of something and then I jump to it.
Okay, know? Yep.
And so, like, the upshot was, like, okay, maybe this hard-to-start thing, which is one thing that was addressed in this article, maybe this is actually just part of me. And if that's the case, that's the mechanical bottleneck for starting, and then all this other stuff I was doing, like running these experiments to see which is the most, how can it be most excited or most inspired or most yep. motivated. That's all, that's actually not important. It's just like there's this broken part and I just had to work around it. And it's like, oh, okay. And so now it's like, now when I am faced with starting something,
yep.
you know, as simple as like maybe changing the cat litter or starting a project or like reading some documentation on something.
Yeah.
I know that's going to be that resistance, and it's just this broken thing. I just had to, like, wiggle something and sort of go by it. So that'll be interesting to try this week, because this, the third week, is the week where I determine if this is going to be worthwhile at all, because this is a big programming week that
okay.
I've set up. And that's going to be the hard, deep dive stuff, if I do this right. Yeah. Yeah, that's about it. That's how much time we got left. Check. You got about 2 minutes.
Oh, wow.
3 minutes, maybe.
3 minutes. We watched Stephen King's The Stand on Netflix the last couple of days.
Looked awesome.
Let me say that again. I watched it after it first came out in 1994.
Yeah.
And I remember getting all the way to the very end, and because it's Stephen King, he can't write endings, got to the ending, and I was like, and I was like, I can't believe I wasted 6 hours watching this miniseries. And
oh, it was a miniseries?
Yes.
Okay, okay.
And Sarah had never seen it, and I had mentioned, I was like, hey, I saw that The Stand was on, so we sat through it, and it was terribly written. Like, I've forgotten how bad the dialogue is, but with Sarah, who's like a super crazy, super reader,
yep.
The minute bad dialogue starts flying, she's just like, oh my God, oh God, like who wrote this? And then of course we had to look it up and it was like adapted from Stephen King based on his own thing.
Uh-huh.
Dialogue was terrible. It takes like 3.5 hours to introduce all the characters. Like it kept going on and on, a new character, a new character, a new character. And it was the same thing. By the time you get to the end, it just turns into this total religious series.
Yeah.
And then the ending is just terrible. Like all this crap, it's just, ugh. So it was interesting watching that again and getting just as irritated with the ending as I had when I was when I was like 19, 20 when I watched it for the first time.
You like reliving those moments.
I like the first like 4 hours because it's all just post-apocalyptic, like a virus just wipes out most of humanity except for these people that for some reason are just immune to it.
Uh-huh.
So there are lots of great shots of just like desolate cities with dead bodies all over the place, and these people are just like walking to this destination. So that was kind of cool.
I guess that's kind of hard to write about. Can you imagine trying to do small talk in like a desolate apocalyptic wasteland?
Probably,
Kevin Smith could probably do it.
I think most competent writers, I think some of the the dialogue was so terrible. It was just bad dialogue. Like just people saying bad, dumb things. It was like, oh.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Maybe they're trying to appeal to a different audience.
Well, that was the thing. They were trying to appeal to... I don't know if people were just dumber in 1994. Their fashion certainly weren't as good. I remember watching some guy in one of the series, he had an episode, he had a gotcha t-shirt on, which is like this terrible fashion thing from like the early 90s. And I was just like, I had a gotcha shirt, and it has like a little shark with a flag coming on the back of it. I'm like, what is that?
I don't even know what's fashionable right
Beautiful
now.
Early 90s haircuts. And
do we
just,
know anyone who's into fashion?
I don't know.
No?
Huh. I don't know.
I'd like to know what's in right now.
Sarah busted out a denim vest the other day. I thought that was pretty nice. Yeah, she had the pop collar on there. I was like, whoa.
That's pretty cool.
Yes.
Well, I guess that does it for this week.
All right, we're going to wrap it up.
Going to get some lunch.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, I guess until next week, I am photographer Sid Caesar.
And I am designer Dave Say.
And we will see you all later.
This should start getting louder right about now.
Right about now.
Right about now.
The music that's been graciously provided by Michael Bellar and the As Is Ensemble.
Yeah.
Visit him at michaelbellar.com.
You should.
Yes.
Should go right now.
Just load it up. We'll wait. michaelbellar.com. Just go.
Yeah.
All right, we will. will see you all next week. MichaelBellar.com. MichaelBellar.com.
Bye.
B-E-L-L-A-R. MichaelBellar.